This podcast is brought to you compliments of Kaspersky Lab, protecting more than 300 million systems worldwide against internet threats.
Welcome to the Digital Underground Podcast. My guest today is Bruce Schneier, a cryptographer, security expert, who I think everybody listening knows. Bruce, thanks a lot for your time today. I know you've been a little busy with all this NSA stuff.
Yeah, it's been a crazy week.
Yeah, definitely. So let's start with the revelations that came out towards the end of last week and about the cryptographic capabilities of the NSA and their abilities to I don't know if we want to say break protocols and ciphers or subvert or whatever the term we want to use is, which I think some of that was a surprise to people, some might not have been. And you wrote a piece for The Guardian sort of in tandem with their revelations. And one of the things that I think everybody took out of that I've seen repeated about a million times in the last few days is that you said, listen, I trust the mathematics in the cryptography at work here. The problems are probably lie elsewhere. What did you mean by that exactly?
Well, we know that the NSA is systematically subverting the cryptography on the internet. So these are the protocols we're using every day. And it's going to be things like SSL and VPNs and possibly your email encryption software. And they seem to do this largely not through advanced mathematics, but by cheating is probably the best way to say it. Through agreements with software vendors, this stuff is deliberately weakened in a secret way known only to the NSA. So you might have, and I'm making this up because I don't know vendor names, you might have Microsoft BitLocker protecting your hard drive, and it uses a good encryption scheme, but through some secret agreement, that encryption scheme has been made deliberately weaker. Mm-hmm. So the security you get, you're not actually getting. And again, I don't know if Microsoft does this, we just don't have company names. And they'll do this through several methods. One is by asking nicely, can you please deliberately weaken your encryption system so we can spy on the bad guys? And a lot of companies will respond to that, or individuals within companies will respond to that. They can also do this through pressure. Make this change or we will not buy your equipment, deny you contracts, whatever pressure they can bring to bear.
Right.
They can do it through outright threats. And they can do it through national security letters. Right? Give us the master key to this CA. Here's a letter that says you have to do it, and you can't tell anybody you've done it. Right? That's what we believe happened to Lavabit. And this is the weirdest one that appeared in the documents. They occasionally have covert government agents working in companies deliberately weakening systems. So it's a variety of methods. And all of these together mean that we no longer know what security systems on the internet we can trust. And I think this is an enormous blow for trust on the internet, for internet security. We thought we were getting this level of security. It turns out we're not.
Right. Yeah, which is, in the past when, there have been, an advance here or a new attack there on a crypto algorithm or something like that, you've often written things that say, listen, don't start running for the exits, calm down, the math is probably fine, attacks always get better, they don't get worse, let's not panic. But in this case, you're talking about, as you said, sort of systemic subversion of a lot of the security that we all rely on.
Right.
For communication.
So the math is generally very strong, but the math needs software to operate. It's actually very clever and sensible, once you think about it, to attack the software instead of the math. That being said, the documents do talk about some kind of cryptographic breakthrough, and we don't know what it is. So I have some guesses. I think in the order of likelihood, a cryptographic breakthrough that would be practical to decrypt actual traffic would be something about elliptic curves that makes them weaker than we think they are, something about conventional, either factoring or the discrete log problem, that makes those systems weaker than we think they are, or an attack against RC4, a symmetric cipher, that makes that weaker than we think it is. So it's prudent to not trust any elliptic curve constants that we don't know the pedigree of. I mean, some of them came from government, and I think they are almost certainly tainted, and we shouldn't use them, and we should use elliptic curves that we generate in a trusted manner, and they should be larger than we've been using so far. We should increase our key lengths for RSA and Diffie-Hellman just to be prudent. And I am a little more suspicious of RC4, and we should probably start moving away from that algorithm.
RC4's had its problems in the past already, right?
You know, RC4 is a really fantastic cipher. I mean, Ron Rosest is the master of the too-good-to-be-true algorithm. You look at it, it's incredibly simple. It can't possibly be secure, yet no one's broken it. And yes, there's been a lot of good attacks. I mean, we know a lot. There are weaknesses, but they're basically theoretical. They're not weaknesses that allow us to read your VPN traffic. You know, and for the NSA, a theoretical weakness is nice, and maybe you write a paper, but what they want is to read your VPN traffic. So practical break is what really matters. And even though it's hard for me to see a practical break against RC4, I think it's the most likely symmetric cipher where there is a practical break. I just can't imagine one for AES. I can't imagine one for their hash functions. These are just too complicated algorithms, and it seems really unlikely. RC4, even though I don't know what it is, I can imagine it.
Okay. And one of the other possibilities you mentioned was, the NSA having made some mathematical breakthrough that, you know, we just don't know about, you know, which is obviously part of their job. That's, you know, why they hire all kinds of mathematicians every year, is to do those kind of things. How likely, I mean, I guess there's not really a great way to know, but in the hierarchy of things, I mean, where does that sit?
I mean, there's no way to know. I mean, certainly their most impressive cryptanalysis tools are going to be these subversions, because it is much, much easier to either change an algorithm so it's simpler, modify a random number generator so it leaks the key. I'm sorry, modify a random number generator so it's less random, modify a protocol so it leaks the key. I mean, all of these things are much more fruitful than going after the mathematics. Certainly they're going after the mathematics, but these things are more effective.
One of the things that kind of struck me when I saw all this last week was, with the scope of the things that you're talking about in, you know, asking people to deliberately weaken products or standards or protocols, you know, all this kind of stuff, I figured over the course of time, somebody would have come out and we would have heard about this. But then you think about all the people we know in the security industry who have said things like this, and you just kind of dismiss them as, oh, right, sure. Of course, the NSA is backdooring every piece of software and every encryption algorithm.
Well, in some ways, that's the amazing thing of this. It sort of it validates all the paranoia. And I think in some ways that's the biggest harm. That when we know the NSA is doing these sorts of things, we now no longer know what to trust. We can't trust anything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's possible that they've only done this to half the protocols on the Internet. But which half? How do you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't. If a company says, well, it's not us, you can't trust them, right? The CEO who says it might not know. The company itself might not know. So it's this lack of knowledge, this lack of certainty that will fuel all this speculation. And since the NSA is no longer trusted, they can't say, well, no, here's the real truth, because we'll never believe them. We're kind of stuck in a very, very bad situation.
It is. It's terrible. And one of the things that I was thinking about is, going back to like the crypto wars of the 90s, which, you know, a lot of that, it was different because it was sort of out in the public. Like, the government was asking companies to do this kind of thing, to insert, you know, or, you know, the key escrow idea or that kind of thing. And, you know, everybody fought it and it didn't end up going anywhere. But all of this, it seems like, you know, the NSA went away wounded from that and then just sort of went and did it on their own, you know, in the background.
Right, and that's actually a really good point. Right? In the early 90s, there was a very public battle of deliberately weakening crypto systems for the benefit of the FBI and the NSA. And the government lost that battle. You know, we did not have a clipper chip. We did not have key escrow. So what they did was they said, well, we can't get people to agree to this. We're going to just do it behind their backs, which, you know, it's kind of bad.
Right. Yeah. It's far worse, actually, than knowing that there was key escrow or, you know, knowing that there was a backdoor on something. It's much, much worse, as you said, not knowing which half of the algorithms are compromised and which half aren't, if that's the case. So where do you see all of this moving in terms of the cryptography and the security community? What are the next steps that you imagine folks like you and others are going to take?
You know, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure. This is primarily a legal and political battle. The real change has to happen within government. The NSA has to be reined in. And whether you think of them as, you know, a new J. Edgar Hoover FBI or just an overzealous organization that is responding to threats and gray areas in law, you know, this has to change. I mean, there are other priorities in society than listening in on the bad guys. And when the NSA deliberately makes the internet less safe for everybody, I mean, they clearly have their priorities wrong. So that's where most of the change has to happen. There probably are some things we can do in the technical community. Last week in an essay, I called on the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, to start figuring this out. What mm-hmm. can we do to help ensure that the security we use operates in the way we think that it does? You know, and I've been thinking about ways to ensure that. Others have been thinking about. These are hard problems, but I think we as engineers have to start figuring them out. How to figuring out what we can do. Can we build a security product that we have some degree of confidence has not been subverted? You know, what can we design to make this better? And again, I don't know the answer, but you know, I'm glad people are starting to think about the problem.
Yeah, I am too. And I, you know, just judging, granted, it's kind of a terrible measure of these things, but just judging by the discussions I've seen going on Twitter among, you know, cryptographers and other smart people, it looks like a lot of folks are definitely sort of getting their minds around it and trying to figure out ways to address it. But as you said, they're difficult problems. I'm not sure, you know, how quickly these solutions can be come up with. I mean, you're talking about years-long problems.
Yes, it's not going to be quick. I mean, this will take years to recover from. And, of course, the problem is going to be momentum. I mean, we're all busy. We have a lot of things to do. This is really important right now, but it's going to be important next month, in 6 months, in a year, in 2 years. I mean, it's very easy to let this slide as we get back to our normal lives. But I really do think change is required.
I do too. And one of the other things I wanted to ask you about, you wrote about, you know, I think, I apologize, I don't remember which piece it was, but you mentioned talking about the folks that may have been asked to backdoor a product, you know, whether it's a hardware chip, you know, a piece of software, whatever it was, you asked people to come forward. We need people to come and talk about this. And you mentioned that you had already been contacted by a few folks with stories like that. Do you expect to be able to make those stories public at some point?
We're trying to, and it's not going to be me. It's going to be actual reporters doing the writing.
Yeah.
And I think there's safety in numbers here, that coming forward with a story is scary. And, you know, you're worried about how people will react. You might have employers that will react badly. But we do need the stories. You know, one of the problems with the reporting so far is we don't have a lot of details. And there are people out there who have pieces of the details, and they don't have government clearances, right? They might not even be under any corporate secrecy rules, and I'd like them to come forward and say what happened, because we need to know the kinds of things that happen. If we're going to protect ourselves, we need the information of what happens. So the more stories we get, I believe the more stories we'll get, the safety in numbers.
Yeah, that's a good point. So hopefully those will start coming out soon. At least to give us some idea of where to look. The last thing maybe I wanted to cover, how do you think all of this is going to affect the long-term trust that the technology community, the security community, everybody has in, I would say, both NIST and, you know, their output, both in terms of, you know, not just cryptographic standards, but all the work they do. I mean, what's the long-term ramifications for that?
Yeah, I think NIST took a big credibility hit, unfortunately. And there are good people there doing good work, but we don't know which of their standards are tainted. We don't know how much collaboration there is with the NSA. And unfortunately, because trust is lost, when they get up and say the NSA doesn't affect our standards, we don't believe them. And that's
right.
Really unfortunate. You know, we need a way to get back trust.
Which is a really difficult problem. It's as any kid who screwed up and, you know, had their parents say, I don't trust you anymore. You know, it's almost impossible to get that back.
Right, or a partner who is, you know, betrayed a spouse. I mean, we have lots of examples of how human trust fails and how hard it is to regain. And there's probably lessons there, too. I mean, the lesson when you betray a spouse, the way to get trust back is through full disclosure. You go to your spouse and say, here's everything. This is what I did. I'm sorry. Please trust me again. You can't say, here's most of the things. Here's some of the things. I'm going to tell you here's everything, but the stuff I'm not telling you, you'll find out 2 months later. You know, those sorts of strategies never work. The only thing that works is full disclosure and a full apology and then reform. And I'm not sure the NSA is up to that, but I'm also not sure what else they could do.
No, it doesn't seem like there's another path. But as you said, you know, we're dealing with the intelligence community, and that's not their forte.
Right.
Is public apologies are not what they do. So, all right. Well, Bruce, thanks so much for your time. This is great, and I think you shed a lot of light on what's going on here and what people should be thinking about in terms of these problems. So, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Compliments of Kaspersky Lab, a world leader in internet threat protection for small, medium, and large enterprises. Visit Kaspersky.com for more information about their line of premium protection solutions.